I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Adam Elliott and I'm joined today, as ever, by Martin Riley. Martin, how are you doing, mate?
I'm doing very good, thank you. I've had my tea already, so that's another win in my column. I had a lovely peppered pork steak with some cheesy mash and vegetables. And it was very, very good. I smothered it all with some hot sauce because I love hot sauce. It was good. How about you? How are you doing?
Forgive me, but someone in the Discord, I can't remember who it was now, said that the standard of food had gone down recently. So hearing that is quite impressive. I myself had a really boring one, so I'm continuing the trend of food not being great. I had fish and chips, but otherwise I'm actually doing quite well. So, yeah, and we are now in the very, very thick of the run-in, aren't we? We are at the final four games point. It is Martin and I, again, as ever. Hello, everyone. But many of you will have already listened to the review, hopefully, of the Sunderland game. And if you have, you'll hear some different voices for once. So go and check that out if you haven't already. But yes, as I say, we are here today to talk about Blackburn, who we play on Saturday. We have no opposition interview for this one, so you'll just have to deal with these two Pascal Strauch lovers. But before we get into that analysis, there's actually some news to discuss, and I think the other boys will have discussed this themselves, but I think we deserve to have our say as well, Martin, which is some sad news, but some expected news, I guess, which is that Stuart Dallas has decided to retire from professional football.
Yes, indeed. As you said, it's some very sad news, but to be honest, it's not something which I wasn't expecting. I know there were a lot of fans who were maybe hoping to see Stewie around for the win, but I for one was never really expecting that to happen. His injury was just too bad, really. I mean, it was 2 years ago it happened, and yeah, he's not going to be able to get back to the player that he once was. So this long out, it takes away the sort of player that Stewie was, which was all about it, about intensity and hard work. And he'll have lost a lot of that, and it wouldn't have been the same. So it's probably best for it to end this way. I know he will agree with that. He will have wanted to contribute, of course, and I would have liked to have seen it. But I am sad that he's retiring either way, because he's been a massive player for us throughout both the championship promotion under Bielsa and in how good we were in that first season under Bielsa. That was topped off by him winning our player of the season that year. So yeah, it's just insane how much he improved from before Bielsa came. Maybe not improved in so much as technically improved, but definitely just overall his work rate improved. Everything about him other than his technique, I think, for me. But he was still a fantastic player for us, and no matter where he played, like left back, central midfield even, he always put in a good shift, and he will be very much missed.
Absolutely. And yeah, as you mentioned, basically an ever-present player for the best part of about two seasons. He literally played every single Premier League game in the season. He got Player of the Year in that first season back. And yeah, just an absolute phenomenon in terms of his physical attributes, which is why it's such a shame, because you know, you think about him and you think about the amount of games he would manage to play back to back, and how much intensity and the commitment levels and the amount of distance he'd cover in various positions, and that versatility was so important as well. And it's really, really a shame because of that, because it's like you go from being someone who's full of energy but you still manage to play every game and it's never really an issue for you, to someone whose career ends because of a freak injury. It's like two polar opposites. You went from being like one of the least injury-prone players in our entire squad to unfortunately having to hang up his boots because of an injury. So, yeah, we'll definitely miss him. I hope that he does stick around with the club. That's what's been said in a few different places. Parag Marate has said similar yesterday about him offering him a role and stuff like that. So, yeah, hopefully he does stick around. But I'll never forget him scoring 8 goals from midfield as a kind of box-crashing, high-intensity number eight. His one-versus-one ability was pretty underrated, actually. He usually took those when they came. And, yeah, just a really intelligent player, I would say, as well. Really fit into not just loads of different positions and roles, as mentioned, but just so well into Bielsa's plan, wherever he was asked to be. So, sad day, unfortunately. And I think that's the only piece of news we really need to discuss. The other stuff was the finances, but I'm sure lots of people have read about that themselves. other people are probably better at explaining that. I think Joe Donoghue has done a pretty good job of explaining some of the bigger numbers and crunching it down. So go and look at his Twitter if you haven't already. I think that's it for this bit. So we'll hop on straight into the opposition analysis now, Martin. And we are, as I said, discussing Blackburn today. We're playing John Eustace, who's now the current boss. It's not the first time this season Leeds have come up against a John Eustace team, is it?
No, it's not. He was the manager of Birmingham before this. And our viewers may remember that he was one who was sacked to bring in Wayne Rooney. And that was a very eventful time for Rooney, which culminated in us getting him the sack, which was nice and fun. John Eustace had got Birmingham playing quite well towards the start of the season. And I think Birmingham's owners will be kicking himself for making that decision to sack him and bring in Rooney, even though if the intentions were to get them playing a more expansive style, just wasn't going to happen. They didn't have the players to do it, in my opinion. So, yeah, it was a very odd decision. But regards to Blackburn and replacing John Dal Tomlinson with John Eustace, I don't think Dal Tomlinson had really got the position in the table which still was after. They may have had some down results, I think, like chaotic under him, I think is the best way to describe them. So I can understand why they wanted to change to bring John Eustace in. It's been up and down with Eustace and not very overall great, I'd say. He's been with less points per game than what John Dal Tomlinson was. So he was running at 1.1 just under, and usage is not 0.77, so he's really not picking up that many results. But we'll dive into the results in a bit more detail shortly.
Yeah, as you say, they had Tomlinson, who did a brilliant job last season and took them to within one game of the playoffs. They actually won the game they needed to win on final day against Millwall, a 4-3 win. It was an exciting victory, but didn't quite get over the line because the teams above them managed to pick up the points required, so they actually had to settle for just outside the playoffs, unfortunately. And they were hoping probably to build on that this season, but it's difficult when you're a club like Blackburn and you have players that essentially kind of outgrow you quite quickly over the last few years. This happened a few times. In some cases, they managed to sell players at the right time, I guess. So Adam Armstrong, they sold to Southampton for about $15 million a couple of years ago. Used that money quite well, filled out the squad and done all right with it. And they've had a bit of a go from that. But then one of the stars that kind of made themselves very aware to the world was Ben Brereton-Diaz, who ended up out of contract last summer. So he ended up leaving on a free contract, which is obviously a massive shame for them. This is their best player leaving, and they've had to rebuild this season. And that's kind of been the story of Blackburn for the last few years. It was going quite well this season under Tomlinson in the first half of the season. It was all right. And then it just suddenly started to spiral, probably around the time that we beat them, actually, 2-0 at Ewood Park. It was when it was really starting to turn the other way. And that's probably why partly they got rid of him, but I think there was quite a lot of unrest behind the scenes, for anyone that doesn't know, and a bit of disagreement between him and the board. for various reasons, and he ended up leaving and decided to take the Sweden job, which is where he's ended up, and instead, yep, they went for John Eustace, who was out of work, which honestly was a pretty good appointment, even though, as you say, it's not been going perfectly well so far. Like we say, he was doing pretty well with Birmingham in the first half of the season, had them up and around the playoffs, beat us in the second game of the season, and now Birmingham have had three managers since, two permanent, one interim, and are currently second bottom. So that was a really poor decision. And that might make you think, yeah, this guy, clearly a decent manager then, if he was getting Birmingham playing well, and I think he is, for one. But as you've kind of alluded to, Martin, he hasn't necessarily got off to the best of starts. Do you want to run me through some of the recent results and stuff like that?
So yeah, so he's had 12 games in charge as Eustace, and in the 12 games, he's just had the one win, which sounds
good win.
Yeah, pretty good win. Yeah, to be fair, he beat the team that we didn't score a single goal past, 5-1 in Sunderland. So yeah, that was a good result for them. But then the rest of the games, they've been 7 draws and 4 losses. So not a whole lot of wins, not loads of losses, you'd say, but just too many draws, you'd say, in this opening part. But I think there's some things that he's done well in that they aren't conceding as much XG themselves. They've had a fair number of games where they've conceded less than 1 XG. Had like 0.7, 0.3, 0.6, 0.7, 0.6. So quite a lot, which were considerably under 1. So they are, I think, tightening things up. But I think that's also, at the same time, sacrificing some of their intent going forward, because they've also had quite a few games where they haven't really created a lot of XG under Eustace. So they've had, six, actually, that would have created less than 1 XG. So, yeah, they've had just a one game where they've really bundled in the XG, and that was against Sunderland, where they won 5-1 and they got 2.7 XG in that. So that's doing a lot of heavy lifting in recent times. So yeah, it's interesting to see what he's doing with them, because one of their biggest strengths for me was their high intensity pressing. That too chaotic under Val Thomasson. So I can understand why he may have tamed that off a little bit to try to get them being a bit more solid. But it seemed like it was a pretty big weapon for them, and that may have sacrificed a little bit too much in their game.
Yeah, can't disagree with that. I just wanted to note, whilst you were talking about results there, it just got me thinking, obviously they beat Sunderland 5-1. We drew with Sunderland 0-0. And then they lost 5-0 in their last game to Bristol City in midweek on Wednesday. Which kind of sums up the Championship, really. that is exactly what it's like. It's an absolutely mental division that we find ourselves in, and this is the sort of thing that can grow itself up at times. They obviously drew 1-1 with Southampton as well recently, so not ideal when you see things like that, but then they lose to Bristol City 5-0, so maybe we'll be all right. We'll have to see. But talk to me a little bit more about them then. You've already started talking about out of possession stuff there, but lean a bit more into some in possession stuff now. How are they actually setting up in possession?
Well, they've had mainly a couple of different formations which they've been doing, mainly a 4-2-3-1 for most of the season. Although they did experiment with a 3-4-3, I think, around about the time when Eustace came in. But they ended up shifting back to the 4-2-3-1 the last 5 or 6 games. So I think maybe he's done with that experiment and gone back to what the squad knows. So it's 4-2-3-1 that we're playing. They do build out from the back, but it's pretty minimal. And to be honest, a lot of their in-possession stuff is still quite similar to where it was under Val Thomasson. They would show some build-up that way, but then soon the opportunity came, they would go quite direct into the final third, try to get their wide players involved, and quite often look to get the ball to Dolan, who's their wide option on the left. He's one that their width holders in the attacking third. They like to get the fullbacks involved in the attack as well, but it's kind of a bit lopsided. The right back, who's been Callum Britton, has been getting forward quite often. He's one of the ball most for them, and is one of their more creative outlets. I think he's been a winger in the past in his career as well, if my memory doesn't escape me. And on the left side, they've got Harry Pickering, who's a player who I really like, left back, who isn't your standard fullback who likes to hold width. He gets involved centrally quite often and makes a lot of inverted runs. He does still make crosses, but he does do a lot of inverted stuff. So it's kind of a bit similar to what we do at times, where we've got one side, which is the width holder, and one side, which is getting inverted. And then obviously the key man who makes a lot of things happen for them is Sammy Smodics. He's the leading scorer in the Championship, and for a reason. He's probably the best finisher in the division, I'd say. He's just finishing well above his XG at the moment, and he's very good at what he does. But yeah, that, I think that a lot of their side for most of the season has come down to high intensity stuff out of possession, which does create a lot of things for them in possession. So there's not too much going on in possession, in my view. And I've only watched one game under Yusuf in full. I've watched some highlights from other ones, so can't really commit to say that they are the same as what they were under John Paul Thomasson, but I won't expect it to be anything massively different. Because the reason why Birmingham sacked Yusuf in the first place was because they wanted to play a bit more of it in an expansive way, and that's why they brought Rooney in. So he is like a pretty direct coach, I would say. He's good at what he does, and he gets teams to be solid, but it's not, I'd say, the most entertaining style of play which he has. But sometimes effectiveness is all you want, especially when you're trying to keep a side in the division, because they drop down the table and they didn't want to drop any further. So yeah, I'll move straight into the out position stuff, actually, because I've already touched on it. They're set up in 4-2-3-1, but it's more of a 4-4-2 in the high press, which they employ, when they do employ high press, that is. So they will look to have Modric joining the striker, and so they have those two front pressing, and the wingers will also be involved with that. So it's quite often four players who will be pressing. But then also when the ball gets to the wide areas, their fullbacks will also push up to press as well when they are in high press mode. So they can be quite intense when they are committing to that, because it's something which they've done all season, even though I don't think it's really a hallmark of what Eustace wants them to do. It's still something which they've got built into them because of the amount of time that they've spent with Thomasson. So it's going to be interesting to see what they're going to do against us. I'm not too sure how it's going to look, to be honest.
Well, the shape, I was going to ask you if that would change dramatically and go maybe back to a back three based on who they're playing. And obviously that's a formation that you can make yourself more compact, solid, hard to break down, as we've seen Sunderland do. And there is every chance that he might revert back to that, especially after a 5-0 thumping. It wouldn't be a surprise. But I note that they didn't against Southampton. They still played a 4-2-3-1. They were at Ewood Park for that game, yes, but they were still in the same shape, and they have been for a while now. So I do think that is probably what they're going to stick with. I don't think they'll go to a back three. But we have been wrong on this podcast before, so take it with a pinch of salt. We might be wrong again. But yeah, as you say, I think he's quite a good manager at playing to a team's strengths rather than being super, super flexible and adaptable. I think actually for a lot of these sort of weaker to middling teams, he's probably the right sort of coach to have in that sense, because he's going to make them, I would say, a team that's better than the sum of their parts. At the same time, he's going to look to keep them solid and get them to break quickly. As you mentioned, they can go direct. But the basic premise really is to get Smodic free anywhere near the width of the goalposts around the 18-yard box, because really good finisher, good ball striking, and has had an excellent season. As many people will know, he's one of the other players that has been nominated for the Player of the Year award. So yeah, that is the basic premise, is just to keep things nice and set and solid, nice and compact, break when you can, and make sure Smodic is available for a cutback or is in space, you know, in the box somewhere on the blind side of a defender to nip in. I know I'm kind of leaning into some player stuff here, Martin, but I just wanted to speak about him a little bit more, which to say that I wouldn't say, even though he lines up as a kind of, sorry, I'll do that again. He lines up as kind of like a number 10. I wouldn't say he is necessarily a out-and-out creator. He's not like that at all. He's more of a second striker. I think you'd agree with that. He's not there to be kind of linking play and knitting things together. He's more there to be on the end of things, whether that's breaking into the box and arriving late, or actually he gets the ball from deep and kind of drives into space and then has a shot. So yeah, I don't necessarily see him as an attacking midfielder, but a good profile, even though he's a little bit older now. He's been linked with loads of Premier League clubs lately, Brentford as well, and stuff like that, and it's not really that surprising. So yeah, but I think that's enough on this section. I've already touched on some stuff there about the level of the squad by talking about Smodics, but are there any other, and you talked about Pickering as well, but are there any other players that you particularly like? What is the general level of the squad overall, in your opinion?
I think it's definitely, I'd say, a mid-table championship side overall. Maybe pushing into the playoffs with people that are really strong individual speed on form. I'll say Smodics is their out-and-out best player in the side. And the rest of the team, the midfield pair is pretty strong in Tronstad and Rankin Costello. I wouldn't say they're the best in the league, but they're also very good for this league at the same time. especially Tron Sad. I do really like him. He's one of the players who came up big in our season scouting and who's done the name. But then we was about to commit to start watching him, and then Blackburn signed him. So that showed me that I was doing something right in looking for players when the Championship side signed him. But yeah, they've recently lost one of their bigger midfielders in Adam Wharton. He went to West Ham, was it?
Oh, he went to Crystal Palace.
Crystal Palace, that's it. And I knew it was one of the Premier League side, but I couldn't remember which one it was. I don't follow the Premier League. And then I'd say that one of their weaker spots is their centre-backs. I don't really rate either of them in Iam and Scott Wharton, who's the brother of Adam. I don't really rate either of them. I think they've got a lot of weaknesses in them. They haven't got a lot of pace to the game. They can be caught on the ball if they pass. And they're very, very error-prone. In the game, I watched some of the highlights from against Bristol, where they lost 5-0. Iam, even though he's their captain, he was responsible for three of the goals. He gave away a penalty, was really loose with the ball, gave it away. So they had a basic one-on-one. And then I forget what happened with the third error, but there were three mistakes in there. So he can definitely force into mistakes. So he'd be a good one to target with some high press action. And then going further forward, I think the one which caught my eye most, other than Smodix, was Tyree Sterling. That's drive forward on the wings, and he's the one you have to keep an eye on because he can often be in space and the ball can get quickly moved through him. And a lot of the games I've watched, a lot of the moves start, even though he doesn't have the most for assists, he's usually quite heavily involved in most of their play, whether it's the pass leading to the assist or if it's the carry leading to the assist, that kind of thing. So he's quite integral to what they do and has been first in the team sheet for a lot of the season. Although, obviously, Smodix is the one where it catches all the highlights because he's the one scoring all the goals.
I'd agree with most of that. When you said to maybe a sort of mid-table to upper half team, I'd maybe slightly disagree with that. I think their best 11 is good enough to be at that level, but they don't have a lot of depth at all whatsoever throughout the team. I think a couple of injuries is a really big issue for them. I think the main thing is the team's quite young, which is obviously something you don't want to have too much of, but you do want some experience, obviously. But looking in the long term, this is a club of Blackburn's size and stature within the Championship. I'm not saying they're a small club, that's a horrible thing to say. But I mean, more in terms of finances and resources, they're basically going to have to do that thing where they, build players up like Adam Wharton and then sell them on for a lot of money. They sold him for, I think it was about 21 million to Crystal Palace, which was a heck of a lot of money for a club of Blackburn's size in their position in the Championship. So that might be good for them this summer if they can get themselves safe. But the problem is that they really are in a proper relegation scrap right now, it's fair to say. I know that they, if you look at the table right now as we are speaking, they are currently comfortably outside and there's quite a few teams between them. But the problem is that they have one of the most ridiculously horrible ends to the season of any team in the bottom half. They play Leeds, they play Sheffield Wednesday in a basically crucial match. It's a six-pointer. And then they've got Coventry, who are going for the playoffs, and Leicester on final day. So obviously that Chef Wednesday game sticks out, but every game against teams around them, they're going to be looking for points. But that, like you say, this squad's probably better than that. They probably should be looking to finish more mid-table next season, again, at the very least, and build. Probably do the same thing again, where they're bringing in through a few youngsters from their academy, through from the sort of lower leagues, and developing them, because that's what they've been excellent at doing over the last few years. And as you mentioned, quite a few players there. I won't go into too much detail about loads of them. I the sort of just basic general understanding I have of them is that quite a workmanlike midfield, a lot of energy, a lot of athleticism out wide as well, a lot of pace out wide, maybe not as much in the defensive areas as you mentioned, which could be an issue. And so yeah, they're okay, they're solid enough, they can be. The draws recently and the amount they've ground out kind of do tie in with that as well, I would say. But yeah, the only player that I wanted to give a little bit more of a mention to is Rankin Costello, because he's been used everywhere for the last few years. He's been literally their Stuart Dallas, which is really fitting based on the game that he's going to be on the pitch for to wave goodbye to everyone. But Costello is basically a right back, right wing back, right winger, central midfielder. He's played all of those roles, probably as a left winger and left back as well at times. I won't be surprised, because they just use him everywhere. He's a utility man for them. And he's currently playing in midfield, as you say. And he's very much a sort of workman-like player, a very hard-working effort boy. And that, I think that really does suit them down to the ground and keeping solid. And like we said, playing to their strengths. So Yes, but I do agree broadly. And Schmodix is definitely the key one, and Dolan the other one. I do like Dolan a lot. He's not got long on his contract, so I think there might be a few teams sort of slightly further up the championship might take a chance on him based just on the fact that he's quite young. And he has over 100 appearances for Blackburn now, so probably someone who's ready for that next step. I mean, not to the Premier League, but up the championship, I would say. Gallagher's not the best striker. He's a bit of a lump, but he is good back to goal. He will work really, really hard, and he will hold up the ball, so he will be a good outlet for them. And yeah, he's a long-serving player. He's been there a long, long time now. But yeah, I think that's it for the players section stuff. So now I'm going to ask you, as always, as our main data man on this podcast these days, Martin, can you give me some underlying statistics, please? Because that is in the title of All Stats, aren't we, in the intro? So you better do it.
Of course, I've forgot to do it. So the first of all, the open play XG, they are sixth in the league, which is pretty damn high for their position in the table, with 46.7 XG. And they've scored 50 goals from that. So they do create a lot of XG, although I think a lot of this is to do with the way they were playing earlier in the season and where they were quite good under John Dalton-Marson. And recently under Eustace, they haven't been scoring as much XG and or goals. So it's maybe that's a poor reflection of the side that they currently are. And then set play XG, they're very, very low, 23rd. They've only got 8.65 set piece XG and scored only 5 goals. That's the joint least for set piece goals. So put some money on a set piece goal on this against us, it's going to happen. And then for the open play XG against, they are the 16th worst, 42.34 XG conceded, with 50 goals conceded from that, which is the fourth highest goals conceded. So you can see that's a big reason why they are quite low in the league, because they have conceded a lot of goals. So they're a very chaotic team, or at least they were under John Dalton-Marson, and that has sort of steadied a little bit, although at the expense of not having very many wins in the process. So it's whether that sacrifice was worth it. And then regards to the more pressing numbers, their PPDA is seventh. So that's the seventh lowest in the league. Again, for those who don't know, PPDA passes per defensive action. So the lower the number, the higher your press is. And for the fourth most high turnovers, 11th most shot ending high turnovers, but they have scored 10 goals from those shot ending high turnovers, which is the joint highest. So they've scored some high turnovers. But again, I think this is more of a product of the early season stuff under Dalton-Marson. So kind of hard to make the data reflect well, but they definitely are capable of pressing well if he does decide to go with that, because it's something which the side suits, and because we have had issues ourselves with teams pressing us recently. So I think it is quite a good chance that they will try to press us in this game.
Lovely. And now we've discussed a sort of player lineup in terms of the actual formation, and in terms of a few individuals we're probably expecting to see. But do you want to have a stab at a actual predicted 11 now for me, Martin? Again, we'll just quickly note that they have played a little bit of 3-4-3 under Eustace this season, so it wouldn't be altogether surprising to switch back to that, especially after a 5-0 defeat. But I don't think either of us are expecting for that to happen. So do you want to have a stab at the 4-2-3-1 for us?
Yeah, so I expect 4-2-3-1 with Piers in goal, or Pears, however you want to say it. Houston at right back, Liam and Watson at centre back, Corinne at left back, Ronstad and Rankin Costello in midfield, and the attacking midfield line of Marpande, Smodic and Dolan with Gallagher up front. There is possibility of some variation to that. They've had, I think, Andrew Moran has played a fair bit with a young striker. He could play up front instead of Gallagher. And they've also had Ryan Hedges, who's played a fair bit on the wing, so he could come in for Marpande. But I think Dolan and Smodic are the ones who are most likely to start. And the line has been pretty consistent. That line and the midfield double pivot has been the same for the past 3 or 4 games, exactly the same. So unless there's any injuries, I don't see that changing too much. But there is some variation where you could see in the attacking lineup other than Smodic and Dolan.
I think the only argument for changes may be that they just lost 5-0. Obviously, some managers don't really care and they'll just continue with the same team because they want it to be the one that clicks. Obviously, when you do lose 5-0, a lot of fans probably expecting at least one or two changes. It wouldn't be surprising if one or two things did happen. Cal McFadzean might come in. He did get subbed on against Bristol City. Very, very experienced player, one of the most in the Championship. Loads of games under his belt, mainly for Coventry. I think Sheffield United as well. He's about 36, 37 now. And he's a big brute, really slow defender. Probably would be the kind of game that he would suit in that sense if they are sitting quite deep. But I think, as you said, it's not that likely they're going to do that. So I think you're probably mostly spot on. It's just there might be one or two things that could change slightly. But I was looking at their bench for the last game and there was a lot of young players that haven't really had that much experience recently. So I don't know. I don't know how much you can lean on that. I think they do have a few injuries to sort of some of the fringe players that would normally, you know, be around the starting 11 or on the bench, but they're just not there at the moment. So, yeah, they could be in for a bit of bother, though, hopefully. But yeah, this brings us to the end of this section of the podcast. But before we move on to the Leeds analysis, we're going to go for a quick ad break. But first, a little more about our patron. Don't worry, patrons, you don't have to listen to this bit. Patreon is a media platform where you can support content creators that you enjoy and you get extra content in return. Our patrons get access for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts. And if you want to pay a little bit more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, such as the one you're listening to right now, analysis articles, videos, and bonus podcasts. We have three tiers in total, Martin. Can you discuss those for us?
Boss, yeah, so the lowest tier is the Barada tier, which is $1.99, which is just the best way just to support us in a little way, which gets you basically just ad-free podcasts. And then the Click tier, which is for $3.99, which gets you ad-free podcasts as well and early access to the preview pods, such as this one. And then the Pablo tier, Pablo Hernandez tier, $4.99, which includes all the previous benefits, ad-free podcasts, early access to preview pods, as well as all the rest of the content which we do in articles, videos and pods.
Lovely. And you can find that at patreon.com/ASAW patron.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Anyway, let's go into this section of the podcast that we talk about Leeds. Yay, fun, especially after a 0-0 draw with Sunderland. But luckily, we're not on that, Martin, so we don't have to discuss that too much. But there is a big positive, isn't there? Even though Stuart Dallas has retired, so he's not available, and Pascal Strauch is out, it looks like, touch wood, because we haven't had his press conference yet, Daniel Farke. We're recording this on Thursday evening, and I think he's going to do one tomorrow. But it looks like we have a full squad other than that, which is really nice, isn't it? It's a good time to have that.
Yeah, it does seem like we should hopefully have a full squad unless there were any other niggles picked up in the Sunderland game, because all the players who have been recently injured in Nonso, Roberts and Groove have all been making appearances, albeit off the bench for Nonso and Roberts. But yeah, just Pascal Strauch, who's a long-term injury, who sadly won't be available for the run-in. It's a real shame because we could have done with him, I think.
Absolutely, because Ethan Ampadu was playing ill on Tuesday yes. night and had to play the full game, unfortunately for him. I hope he's all right. He probably is. He's probably just had a lot of rest the last few days and a load of lemon and honey teas and Lemsips and all the rest of it. So hopefully he's fine for Saturday, but it looks like most players will be. And the good thing as well, while we're on this and on the players' injuries front and player welfare front, I guess, we don't have a game after this for a little while. We don't play Middlesbrough till Monday, the whatever it is, I think it's the 22nd or something, so we've got a nice long rest for a lot of players that probably need it, and then you can just attack three games of the run-in. Hopefully win them all. Leeds, let's talk about them now properly. How are we going to play in possession, Martin? How are we going to set up, do you think? Is it going to be pretty much the same as usual against Blackburn, or do you expect anything different?
I expect it to be relatively same as what we always look to do. We will try to look at to have most of the ball, but we also will, I think, especially in this game, go more direct at times because they can be vulnerable themselves to direct balls behind when they do commit to a higher press. If they do decide to go for that, then that would be a good way to get around that and to get our players on the ball quickly in the final third. It may go against the possession style, which Farquhar wanted to do, but I think even he will notice that there is these sort of spaces to attack if we can get those balls into the areas, and hopefully in a better manner than what we were attempting to in recent games, because I think our longer distribution has been a bit poor in the past few games, so that needs to be improved and get players onto the ball quickly with these longer central passes, whether it's the incisive ones on the ground or if it's the more lofty ones to wider areas. I do think these passes can do well in this game, so possibly a little bit more direct than normal, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was just the same. Keep hold of the ball, try to pin and burn in, and try to create as much as we can.
Yeah, I hope they do press us as intensely as, maybe not super intensely, but kind of intensely, maybe not as much as they would against, I guess, a poorer side in the league, but probably more so than, say, Sunderland did the other night. And if they do that, then, like you say, there will be decent spaces in behind to exploit, whether that's sort of lofting a ball to where Dan James can run onto it in a wide area, or if it's towards Bamford or Joseph, if whoever's playing up front, probably going to be Bamford, but we'll talk about that, in more of a central space, because I think Bamford in particular has actually managed to get on the end of quite a few of these passes recently, but just hasn't necessarily had the speed or the sort of, I guess, burst of pace to get away and create separation from his defenders. If he still had the pace he had 3-4 years ago, we'd be laughing at some of these passes. But yeah, I do agree with you that that's going to be a big area of our game potentially in this game. But it wouldn't also be surprising, like you say, for us to try and pin them and just keep the ball knocking around in their sort of half. But we need to show a bit more penetration than we have recently. I don't want to lean too much into review stuff, but certainly has been lacking recently. We need to just take a few more shots as well. How do you expect us to approach this game out of possession then? Because it's probably more interesting. Obviously, we've discussed Blackburn already. Quite a lot more likely to go direct, especially into wide players to get moves going, but how do you expect us to counteract that, and how else do you expect us to set up just in general out of possession?
I think by and large Blackburn will probably go over any press which we try to employ, so I do think that we will try to press them because they can definitely be pressed. I've seen quite a few examples in when I've been watching highlights of games where I couldn't get the full game where goals for their opponents has come from them being pressed. So I do think that that is an area where we can get joy. If we can manage to get hold of them before they manage to pass it direct, that would be very good. I think most of our attackers have a speed advantage over their defence, so that should help us to put pressure on quickly. So we'll expect us to be quite intense in this game to try to take advantage of that. We'll need to make sure that we're being tight to the wide players and making sure we're not getting too compact, especially where Dolan is involved. He is quite often the out ball for them, and they will look to hit diagonals into him on the ball quickly so he can carry it forward. So he'll have to have a lot of close attention paid to him. They also do like to get their fullbacks involved as well, so our wingers will need to be on top of their game and making sure that they're being looked after, especially Harry Pickering, who Griff central quite often. So if it is Dan James, and he'll have to be following him central as well. So rather than sticking wide, he'll have to be doing more action in the midfield areas, I think. But yeah, I think that covers what... I don't think it should be massively different to what we normally do. But it's more Blackburn going over what we try to do, I think.
Yeah, I'm not going to add anything to that. So we'll just dive straight on into the sort of player section for us. Is there anyone that you can see having a big positive impact on this game first?
Definitely the fullbacks for me. I think Junior Turpo, for one, has been very good for a while, and wasn't maybe at his best in the recent game against Sunderland, but I'd have the team as a whole really wasn't. So it's hard to really put too much blame on him. But they'll have to both be effective both in and out of possession. So to make sure we keep an eye on their men and the fullbacks overlapping, making sure that asking for help when they need it, and the winger to get involved to help as well. And then just whoever it is who's going to be tasked with marking Sami Smodic, because he's definitely their danger man. And if most times, if you can shut out Smodic, you shut out Blackburn. Most of their danger comes through him. So if we can shut him out and make sure we could do a good job on that. And did he score in the reverse fixture? I'm trying,
no, it's 2-0.
I think he did he? Yeah. So what sort? So that's what we did in the previous game. We kept him relatively quiet. I don't remember him being too much of a nuisance in that game. I think maybe he had one decent shot, which he put over. But I don't think he was too much of a problem for us. So if we can do a similar thing to that, and especially because his game is at Elland Road, so I would expect us to be really up for this and to show a good reaction in this. And then going more forward the other way, we'll have players like Somerville. I think he's going to be the one, because I don't really rate their right-back Britain out of possession. He's good in possession and creates a lot of action for them in final third. He gets a lot of good balls into the box, but he is pretty weak defensively, and Somerville can definitely get at him, I think. So he's been the one who's, even in against Sunderland, was the one with the most spark in his game, I think. So I would expect him to also be quite influential in this game.
Heard you say that as bark, not spark, even though I worked it out that you meant spark. So what you were saying there, he's got lots of bark and no bite, because he has no bite out of possession, and it still works. I agree about a majority of what you said. The one thing I would say is it doesn't feel like Routaert and Somerville, which we always use as answers in this question, are going to be as crucial, I think, in this game. They're still going to be. Obviously, the two of our most creative and, I guess, threatening players in any kind of situation, whether that's when they're compact or deep, or whether it's when we can catch them out in transition. But I think this is actually just one of those games where composure across the board from a lot of players is going to be needed. And I say that because I think that was something that was lacking a little bit from quite a few players, not necessarily Somerville. Certainly Ampadu was going a bit hero ball-y with some of his passes into midfield and forward areas, not really thinking too cleverly about his passes, which I never criticised Ampadu, and I voted for him actually for player of the year, so feels harsh to say that, but that was one of the players that caught my eye in that regard against Sunderland. But even Routaert towards the end of the game, just a complete lack of composure, just flinging that ball into the box. You need to really, some of these guys need to think about what they're doing and in a little bit more detail, I would say. And that goes more for in possession than out of possession stuff. Out of possession, yeah, fullbacks, like you say, are going to be really key. And then when we have the chance to spring on the counter, that's going to be super crucial as well. But for me, it's just about players keeping themselves with the right kind of temperament on the ball, choosing when to go direct, choosing when to actually choose their passes carefully. And the one player I really want to give a big shout out to, if it turns out that we are trying to pin them, that I think is going to be like completely crucial, and he caught my eye in the second half against Sunderland in particular, was Glenn Kamara. Reason for this is just that he basically is a dual monster at the moment, and has been for most of the season. So if the ball is turned over, or it's, you know, anywhere near the midfield area and it's loose, he's usually straight onto that, and he's usually quite good at winning them. So if we're going to try and pin them and the ball's going to come loose at any point, you need him to be feeding off those scraps, winning those 50-50s and keeping that ball in their half as much as possible. There's been games this season where he's been crucial to that, and hopefully if that is the case in this game, he would be for that. But I'm not necessarily fully expecting that to be 100% needed, because as you mentioned, they're probably going to go quite direct and try to get out a little bit, and they do need points. They can't just sit in and expect that a draw is just like okay for them. They probably do need to try and find ways to win this. So I'm not expecting them to be as deep as Sunderland, for example. We might be wrong, but I think you and I probably both agreed there that they're not going to be quite as compact, quite as a bank of three, bank of four as Sunderland were for large parts of the game on Tuesday night. But yeah, as we're talking about players now, do you want to have a little stab at a predicted lineup again? I always use that phrase, little stab, but have a little stab at a predicted lineup for us. I think it's going to be largely unchanged, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I think it'll most likely be pretty much the same side against Sunderland. I think the only change I could see, if he is available for the full game, will be Nonto coming in for James. I think that's maybe the only one I could see changing. I'm going to go with the exact same team as what we saw midweek. So Melier in goal, Gray at right back, Rodon and Ampadu at centre back, Serpo at left back, Groove and Camara in midfield. Then I'm going to actually say Nonto is going to start. So I'm going to say Nonto, Routaert, Somerville and Bamford. I think Bamford will start again. That's one thing that probably is up for debate a lot at the moment. I haven't actually rewatched the Sunderland game. I haven't had time.
Don't.
But I just wanted to quickly touch on Routaert from the Sunderland game, because I think he had his probably his worst game for a while in that game. It's hard for me to be critical of the guy because I love him so much, but he was more erratic than normal in this game, I felt, and some of the times he was going for shots were just bonkers.
I mean, hero bully.
One time where the ball, he chested it, and it did tee up nicely for a volley out, I can understand. But in the circumstances, like you mentioned before, it's a little bit more composure to think that I'm never going to get this in on the goal, am I? And he didn't get it anywhere near the goal. So these have a bit more composure in these games. And obviously, he's still quite a young player, so I imagine it's quite tough for him to rein in those urges. And I'm hoping to see a better game from him. And I think we will. I'm hoping to see a nice reaction from him and have a good game in this one.
Yeah.
I think he can definitely get at their midfield. And I think if they do decide to press us, there'll be a lot of space for him to work in. So that's going to be fun if things do go well and he gets back to his there, and he can have a really good game in this one.
Yeah, I don't want to touch too much on this because I think the other boys are going to cover this on the Sunderland one in a lot more detail. But yeah, I agree with what you said. And I do think there's probably potentially, and both you and I said it at the time, that he was brought back too soon and maybe shouldn't have played that Watford game. Probably should have just had those extra 3 or 4 days just to rest and then come for Hull. And he might have come back in a slightly better shape. But now he's kind of... Yeah, it's just not quite clicking for him, but he's going to still be so crucial. And I think calls to drop him are absurd because, well, you've got essentially for me in three players that we quite often see, three proper mavericks in terms of what they can do out of nothing moments players, which is Somerville, Routeur and Nonto. Nonto probably the least of the three, but still has that in him. And we are going to need those guys, and they're going to be so important in some games between now and the end of the season. All three of them at times, I think, coming out with big moments. They have this season, especially in the last few months, especially Nonto, especially, has really stepped up to the plate when Somerville had a small dip. But yeah, we're going to need all of them to be improving and in terms of their composure and making sure that they're doing the right things in the final third consistently. That I get why he did that volley. I would have done the same. The footballer in me would have done the same, but yeah, you're right. You need to show a little bit more class and composure. And he has so many times a season. But yeah, just hopefully that is right in that area of the pitch. I don't agree with you, though. I do think it'll be James that starts. If we're doing a predicted lineup, this is not necessarily what we would do. I would start Nonto myself, but I think James will start. I still think he'll get another game. Maybe Nonto will come on earlier. Who knows? But I don't know. I wouldn't be expecting that either. Bamford is the interesting one. Again, if we're doing our lineup, I think I'm certainly of the opinion that I would give Joseph a go, or just bring him on much earlier than we are. But I think if we're going to, again, just do a predicted lineup, I agree with you. Bamford's probably going to start, and I imagine he probably will for the rest of the season. Now, like I said, after this game, it gets a bit easier to manage minutes because you've only got three games left. Obviously, Middlesbrough and QPR aren't spaced quite as nicely apart as we'd like, but it's still like it's not too much in terms of the intensity and things like that. So I think it'll be pretty okay for most players now to basically play every game and hopefully not get any more injuries or anything like that. Yes, well, finish off now with our last couple of questions, which we always ask. We don't do predictions on this podcast, Martin, but what do you expect watching this game of football will look like?
I expect it to look like us having quite a lot of the ball. I would expect us to dominate possession in this one. And I'd imagine Blackburn will be pretty aggressive out of possession. I do still think that we will get by that. I think we'll manage to pin them in at times, and we'll have a lot of efforts on goal. Blackburn will have chances in transition because they are very good at hitting in transition, being quite direct. So I do think there'll be chances to both sides. So it's just going to be whether we can make the most of those moments where we do have consolidated possession. And I think it could be quite difficult if we don't make the most of that, because I don't think there'll be as many moments where we can hit them in transition. I think it'll be a lot of us trying to break them down, even though I do expect them to be quite aggressive at session. I do still think that when we're over that address, there will be a solid and difficult for us, especially with how knackered our side is at the moment. It can be fun. So I hope we do a better job than we did midweek.
I think one of the things to note here is that Blackburn, as much as I've said, they need points, and they're probably going to have to go for it at points in this game. I think the longer the game wears on, the happier they are going to be to collect a point Even Eustace, I think, will be pretty happy if the game is 0-0 or 1-1 or whatever, and it's sort of edging towards the 70th minute. I think teams are naturally going to have a bit of tendency to drop deeper at that stage, and not necessarily be a tactical thing. And so even though you and I both agreed that they're going to press quite aggressively to begin with, I think the longer the game wears on and the more frustrated we get, the deeper they're just going to get, and eventually they might be sat in quite a deep block, but I don't expect that to begin with. So that's where what I expect the game to look like, I guess, unless we score. And if we do, I've said this before on this podcast, but that's where the game really will open up. They cannot just like accept a low scoring defeat and go, oh, it's fine, we've got other games. They can't do that. They need to get a point if they can, at the very minimum. So they're going to have to go for it. And if they do that and they go as aggressively as we know they can, they could really open up like the Bristol City game did in midweek for them. So hopefully it goes more like that and less like the draw they recently got with Southampton. Let's put it that way. But yes, like I've kind of been touching on it there, but where do you expect the game will be won or lost? Because I'm going to say the first goal again is going to be so important here.
Yeah, I would agree. The first goal is going to be massive in this one. And if a goal doesn't happen in the opening 30 minutes, then it'll benefit the team who scores massively. Because Blackburn have recently scored early goals and gone on to absolutely annihilate the team against Sunderland. Sunderland came out more when they scored the early goal and just ended up being so open in transition. Just the ball was so quick to get through to the final third because of that. So if they do score early, and then that could make things difficult for us because of how effective they are. And with a striker like Sammy Smodics, he doesn't need many chances. He's not going to miss one-on-ones time after time. He's going to score them. He's going to score half chances. Mm-hmm. So we just need to make sure we don't give him any chances. That's going to be another big thing for us, is whether we can keep him quiet. And I think if we do keep him quiet, then we should do well in this game, at least to get a draw. Because that's only one part of it. We still need to do well at the other end of the pitch. But it will be a big part of winning this game. We'll be keeping Smodics quiet as well.
One of the things that I've been quite frustrated recently with, I like him a lot and I do rate him and I think he's a good player. Elia Gruev, in a couple of performances, has had a bit of a tendency, especially in home games, to drop quite deep to help with build-up with the centre-backs and things like that. And I've not necessarily agreed with doing that in some games, because quite often we've been the aggressive team, the team sort of pinning the opposition, and he hasn't been needed there. It's kind of useless at him just sitting around the halfway line. He might as well push himself up further. But actually in this one, you kind of touched on it there with Smodics, the rest defence is going to be important. Actually, I don't want him to go as far up the pitch as usual. I think he does need to not necessarily man-mark him, but be at least within close enough proximity to deal with him and be aggressive on him when he has to be, to jump on him in the press, not let him have time and space on the ball anywhere near our box, because as you say, he will take those half chances. But yeah, the game that will be won or lost if we can score early. I really don't see a way back for them if we do. I think our powers of recovery, if they score first, have been there this season, so we could find a way back into the game ourselves, even though it'd be difficult. But if we score first, I think we could easily just transition on them constantly and just be ripping them to pieces, really. So hopefully that is the case. Hopefully someone does take one early. Kind of want one to just go off Pat's arse at the moment, the way things have been going for him. But that's why I would say the early goal, and then whether we can deal with Smodics in and around our box, that's going to be the main things. And yeah, just be really careful again in transition with their wide players. Dolan is so quick and so nippy. He's really, really small, good centre of gravity, so be very, very careful when he's running at you. Don't commit too much. And obviously, Gray has dealt with most wingers well this season, but there's obviously that chance that someone pulls out a Liam Miller-like performance against him, so hopefully that's not the case. But yeah, I think that's just about everything, Martin. So, just a quick reminder to everyone listening, the website for our Patreon is
patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
And yeah, we'll be back with a review of this game and a preview of the Middlesbrough game very soon. But all that's left for me to say is thank you very much to Martin.
And thank you as well, Adam.
And thank you, dear listeners. I hope you enjoy the game and we'll see you soon. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.